Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
It seems like more and more these days when I'm out shopping with my wife at a mall or eating out at a restaurant, I notice children as young as 10, sometimes maybe even 5 and 6-year-olds that are overweight, soft around the middle, and quite obviously out of shape, not to mention a lot of teenagers. And guess what? If they're with a family, sister or brother and mom and dad also tend to be overweight because obesity runs in families. And I trust this does not describe your family, but if it does, early autumn is an ideal time for the whole family to transform your attitude and your behavior. And sadly, for most overweight kids, bad eating habits and lack of exercise will carry over into adulthood. And from our guest website, here are some of the things obese kids can look forward to as grown-ups. Weight loss struggles, adult diets fail 95 to 98% of the time, and obese women spend almost $4,900 a year more than average on health care and other necessities, and obese men spend around $2,600 more, and obese employees experience 76% increase in the risk of short-term disability because fat people get sick more, and obese people on average knock 4 to 5 years off their life expectancy. And of course, they're highly susceptible to things like type 2 diabetes, stroke, and heart attack. And not to mention, obese people tend to be unhappy, have fewer and less satisfying relationships, and earn less money. So not only will you benefit from a healthy lifestyle, your family will as well. And here's a burning question: who should take the lead in getting the whole family in shape? And our guest today, Tim Terrio, states emphatically that you moms are the key to better family health. In fact, he's written a brand new book titled The Healthy Family Evolution, Moms Strong. But stay tuned, men. We husbands can also have an impact. And Tim Terrio is founder and president of Terrio Physical Therapy Fitness, Inc., and since its inception in 1998, it's grown from a single employee, Tim himself, to 13 locations and over 200 employees. And as a physical therapist, certified athletic trainer, and certified strength coach, he has over 20 years of personally assisting thousands of clients. And he shifted from treating individuals to developing programs for rehab, athletic excellence, individual health and wellness. And hello, Tim, and welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Well, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Well, you contend that to lead the charge to better family health and wellness, moms need to realize the power that they have. What is this power, and what can mom do to lead the family evolution to better health?
Well, first of all, I like to point out to people is the reason I called it the healthy family evolution is we've evolved into sickness. This wasn't an overnight thing.
No.
We've, over the last 30, 40 years, evolved into being a sick community. The obesity rates now, the percentage of Americans that are overweight or obese is now over 60%.
Wow.
Some areas even higher. That chronic diseases, there's 24 million type 2 diabetics in America right now, but there's an estimated 79 to 80 million pre-diabetics that are on their way. So the statistics are uglier and uglier. Heart disease still continues to be a killer. The number one killer and the underlying cause of that, a lot of it, is weight.
Yeah.
So the sad part is 80% of those are preventable. 80% of those of type 2 diabetes and heart disease is preventable. There's a small piece, 20%, that's genetic, but all the doctors you talk to will tell you, look, we got to get this thing under control because it's just a time bomb ticking in America. So when I looked at it, I've been involved out here with my community health department on trying to tackle this obesity problem. And we looked at it from all different points of view. And then my aha moment was, wait a minute, we're talking to the wrong people. Because who could really be the linchpin in this whole thing is moms. The problem we have is that moms, something happens when they get that title and everybody else's needs and wants become paramount to their own.
Yeah, that seems to be the case.
So, yeah, so in the book, I contend that the first step of the healthy family evolution is the mom has to say, you know what, I have to become a priority here. I have to get my health in order first before I can get a family.
Just like the female lions, when they hunt, also eat first so that they can maintain
They need to
strength.
Stay strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so that the book is just a journey. I wrote it as a story.
Yeah.
The typical kind of mom thing, they take a kid in, kind of what you were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
Take a kid in for his pre-sports physical, and yeah, the kid's been a little overweight. You know, we know he's not active. And all of a sudden, the doctor decides to test the kid to see if he has diabetes.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that's becoming a more and more real conversation daily with doctors and pediatricians and families that, hey, this overweight has now shifted. We changed the name. It used to be called adult onset diabetes.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Insidiously changed the name to type 2, and the reason they did that was because the number of kids being diagnosed with type 2 diabetes is one of the fastest growing diseases in America.
That is most unfortunate. When you say moms are the fulcrum to family life balance, what do you mean by the fulcrum?
Well, it's the whole balance issue. One of the things I talk about is, you know, everybody talks about balancing life.
Yeah.
You know, work and home balance, but
that
only works when the fulcrum is still.
Yeah, that's
balance
true.
Balance only works. You move the fulcrum, everything falls out of balance.
Yeah.
So this whole illusion that it's a static environment isn't true. The fulcrum is always being pulled one side or the other.
I see.
Well, one of the things I tell people is that we individuals, we are the fulcrum of our balance in our life.
Yeah.
So when we allow ourselves to be pulled to one side or another, we know that the whole system is going to go out of balance.
Yeah.
What we can do to avoid that is if we know we have to temporarily shift to the work side, we can communicate to the others around us to know, hey, this is what's going on. This is what I need to help support. I can shift the weight on the top too and stay in balance. And I think especially for moms in these days, there's so many working moms out there that are juggling so many things. And the number one thing they say is, well, yeah, when am I going to do this thing? And the good news is you can do it. I started a group of moms back in January. So I've been running a program with them. And the good news is they're all still going strong.
Oh,
out
that's
of the,
great.
The
oh, I loved
group.
It in your book when the mother discovered, you know, from the doctor that her son was borderline diabetic, and then she realized that weight had been sneaking up on her over the years, and she needed to get herself in shape. And then when the husband was first told about it, he, like most husbands, just sort of chuckled and said, well, the doctors always find something wrong with the kids, and he'll grow into it because he's about to have a growing spurt, and made all these excuses to not face the facts. And certainly the mother had to be the key in your book, and I think that's probably typical.
Yeah, and they're the key to just running my physical therapy company. I just know that the people that always call and make the appointments are the moms.
Yeah, that's
whether
true.
It's for them, it's the kid or the dad.
Yeah.
It's the mom that's saying, "Hey, okay, I need to get an appointment for my husband, for my kid, or themselves." So they're also the ones that are going in, you know, a lot of the times buying groceries. So.
Yeah,
you got to understand the power you have by what you put in that cart.
That's very true. Well, okay, you're the mom and you want to exercise your power to lead the whole family to better health. Obviously, one of the things you can do is buy more healthy groceries, but where else do you start and how do you get hubby and the kids to listen and to take you seriously? I know my wife is always lecturing me on what I should eat, but I often tune in one ear and out the other.
Exactly. That's the selective hearing we get as husbands. You know, even when it's to our own benefit, we don't listen sometimes.
Yeah.
Now, I think there's a few things. One is, one of the things I preach about is we got to get rid of this idea that this is a fast, easy thing.
Yeah.
There's no quick solutions. There's no silver bullets out there. The the weight loss industry is a multi-billion dollar industry every year.
Yeah, they love the fact that we're on a roller coaster so they can sell us the same stuff next year after we get it all back.
Change the name and we'll buy it again. So,
I love these ads you hear on, or you see on the internet, or you hear on the radio, this wonderful pill that all you need to do is take this a couple times a day, or some powder you sprinkle in and make a drink, and you don't have to exercise much at all or really change your diet. It's just going to magically take all that weight off. But you're saying that those don't generally work well.
Those don't work. We've had those for years. They used to call them snake oil salesmen back in the 1800s, right?
Yeah, that's for sure.
If it sounds good, too good to be true, it is.
Yeah.
And I think part of the problem I see when we're buying food, so mom's out there buying food, we got to get back to eating more natural foods. And I'm not a big proponent of arguing about how many vitamins are left in food.
Yeah.
It's still a lot better than a processed food.
Yeah.
So my thing is, hey, get back to as natural a level as you can. Now, I know it's not feasible all the time, but if you start picking up those packages, one of the first things I ask moms to do, or we ask people to do, is just do an audit of your fridge, freezer, and pantry. Take a look at what's in there and see that. Pick up some packages and see if you can even pronounce what's in the packages. And you'll find you can't. Because that's the first step. In the battle between our will and environment, so we might have good intentions and we've got our willpower, but in the battle between that and environment always wins.
Yeah.
So it never fails that I walk to the pantry or the fridge and I'm hungry, and if the pantry and fridge are stocked with bad foods, that's what I'm going to eat. It's convenient.
Yeah.
Another one I like to tell people is, there's this huge myth out there that eating healthy is more expensive than eating bad food. And that's totally not true. If it was, all these fast food places wouldn't be making millions of dollars in profit.
That's true.
They're buying the food cheaper than they're selling it.
Yeah. Well, most of us that you're speaking to are well into our 40s or 50s or in middle age anyway. Our kids no longer are small. They're preteens and teens, most of them. Isn't it much harder and close to impossible to influence offspring behaviors or children age? I know they're always running over to McDonald's for a burger and a Coke, sit around on the iPhone and play video games hour after hour, so they're not getting exercise and out with their buddies, girlfriend, and boyfriend most of the time, and they're beyond our reach as parents. A lot of their diet. How do we, inspire them really to get on the same change in habits and the type of weight loss and the things that we're trying to do ourselves?
Right. Well, it's definitely a lot easier if they start early understanding it.
Yeah.
Then, they acquire that taste for processed foods and fast foods. But I think the big thing is there's still something that motivates the kids.
You know,
if it's an athlete, I tend to use that. That, look, you're not going to be your athletic best if you're putting junk in your car, right?
Yeah, I think it's probably easier with the athletes than with the video gamers and those types.
Yeah, and it's still, there's just that premise, though, about feeling good.
Yeah.
You know, everybody, I think, has it in their lives that we want our lives to work, right?
Yeah.
And we want to look good and feel good. You know, if for no other reason than hopefully find a mate someday, right?
Yeah, that's true.
The animal kingdom.
Yeah.
So it still comes back to what's available at home. And I think the bigger thing is, what are they seeing modeled around them?
Yeah.
It's
so crucial that we work on ourselves so that we're good role models in terms of what we eat and how we look and how much we exercise. If we look really great and drop a few pounds and, change our habits, really, not just drop the pounds, but, change your whole lifestyle, it's more likely that our teenagers will follow suit, I would think.
Yeah, teenagers are great at sniffing out hypocrisy, right? They're going to point it out to you every time. You're preaching to me about this, but you don't do it. And that's why in the book I talk about moms, like, don't even try to convert your husband or your kids.
Yeah, that's
first.
A good point. You don't
get yourself
certainly don't
going
preach
out
at
ahead.
Them all the time.
Right. Yeah, that's for sure. That turns everybody off. But it's in the book I talk about a human being's really like a person riding an elephant.
Oh.
So the person riding the elephant is our analytical, logical side.
Yeah.
It knows what we're supposed to do. The elephant's our emotional side.
I see.
So just like you're never going to see somebody go out in the wild and jump on the back of a wild elephant and try to ride it. If they do, it ain't going to last very long because that elephant's going to stomp them into the dirt.
Yeah.
But then that's what we do with our bodies and our lives.
Yeah.
We let our elephant just run wild, do whatever it wants, eat whatever it wants. And then every January 1st, we put a chain on the elephant, we drag it down to the gym and say, we got a New Year's resolution that we're going to slim down.
Yeah, that's such a joke.
And then we're surprised when the elephant says, hey, I'm out of here, and when there's a stampede out the door emotionally. And that elephant goes, I'm never going back in that place again. I hate those people. I hate everything about it. And the elephant will make up every excuse.
Yeah.
So the only way you can train an elephant is it has to be over time and it has to be slow. And
yeah,
that's how we
true.
Have to train our that's why it's a long process.
Yeah. And why
so
it's not step
easy by step. It's not a sprint. We gotta just take the walk. And also know that occasionally the elephant's gonna leave the path and that's okay. That's just life.
Yeah.
And when that happens, I like to tell people, look, when you've got this plan, you're sailing across the ocean, you hit a storm, you get blown off course.
Yeah.
Well, just stop, reassess what damage has been done.
Yeah.
Where are we at? Reorient, and then get back to work.
Yeah. Well, on your website, you offer a three-pronged approach to weight loss, and I really was fascinated by that because it makes so much sense. Could you, give us those three prongs? And I thought that's a great way to go about, the long-term change in habit and kind of stuff you're talking about.
Are you talking about the physically?
Well, talking about scientifically determining your resting metabolic level.
Yeah.
And then,
right.
You know, it sounded really interesting. I'm not sure I understand all of it. But
right. So we human beings have a resting basal metabolic rate or a resting energy expenditure. So if we do nothing but lay in bed all day, we burn calories.
Yeah.
Well, first thing, a calorie is just a unit of measure. It just measures energy.
Yeah.
So it's calories are not our enemy.
Yeah, no.
There's no such thing as a good calorie or a bad calorie. There's just a calorie. It's like saying there's a good inch and a bad inch.
Yeah,
it's just an
true.
Inch. Now, you might be measuring something good or bad with that inch or with the calorie. So we need energy. We're actually have to have a certain amount, and that's our resting energy level. That keeps our heart beating, our stomach, our digestive tract going, our brain going, all of our vital functions. So we actually have there's metabolic testing units where you can do a breathing test, and you can figure out what your metabolic rate is.
I see.
So scientifically, we know, instead of the old, I'm fat because I have a slow metabolic rate, or he's skinny because he has a high one, that's not really true. You can actually test it.
I see.
And once we test it, then we can look at, okay, here's the calorie meal plan you need to be on. And I'm not a big fan of diets. I can't stand diets.
We know how much metabolism, what we're burning in calories, and so we know how much then we should be intaking each day then.
Right. So you set it a little lower.
Yeah.
And then it also... Then you take and you look at your physical condition. So there's however many calories we burn a day just laying in bed.
Yeah.
And there's more calories we burn a day walking around.
Yeah.
So and doing our jobs.
Yeah.
And then there's added exercise on top of that.
Yeah.
So it's a simple math problem.
I see.
If we eat a pound of fat is 3,500 calories.
Yeah.
So every time we eat 3,500 calories that we don't burn off, our body stores it in the form of fat for future use.
Yeah.
The problem is we never tap into our stores and burn.
Future use just keeps building up the surplus.
We're storing up for the winter, but winter never comes.
Yeah, like the bears.
Exactly. At least they go to sleep and burn some more calories and come back out. We don't do that. I mean, and it's the way our bodies were built, right? During hunter and scavenger days, when we didn't know when the next meal was going to come. So our body stored it. unfortunately, we could have never guessed that there would be fast food on every corner and grocery stores on every corner.
No.
There's no shortage of food. There's no trouble finding calories anymore. The trouble's burning them, because at the same time, now we have drive-thrus, we have, you know, escalators. We don't move like we used to move.
But well, that makes so much sense. You think about how much you're taking in and how much you're burning up, and then you assess how much physical activity you're getting and how much additional calorie you'd be burning beyond your just sleeping and resting all the time. And then I guess you make a commitment to slowly increasing that or decreasing the calorie intake would be the final step, I guess.
Yeah, and it's one of those things. There's actual, the other thing that's happened in America is we've forgotten, you know, when I went to school 30 years ago for college, the first time, I learned these principles of conditioning, they call them. They used to call them the 10 cardinal principles of conditioning.
I see.
And then over the years, and there are things, crazy things like safety, like being careful when you work out, learning proper technique, gradual increases. Gradual overload so your body responds.
Yeah.
So the scary part is the world kind of forgot those.
Yeah.
So at the same time we have this increased obesity and overweight, if you look at what's being sold as exercise programs, they're getting more and more extreme.
Yeah, that's for sure.
So there's a bunch of them. You can buy them off TV. You watch TV shows. But that's not what people need. If you're sitting on a couch,
you've got insomnia and you stay up late at night, you can see all kinds of those.
Yeah, that's not a good time to buy it.
No.
I mean, if you're not sleeping good already. Because it sounds good and it looks good and it's just like that pill. We think, oh, my gosh, look at that. In 90 days, I can have a six-pack, even though I've never had a six-pack in my life. But this time, I'm going to do it. We get ourselves all worked up. We buy it. It's way too hard. We end up injured, especially now, you know, those of us in our 40s, 50s, and on up.
Yeah.
Our bodies aren't the same as they were when we were 18 or 20 years old.
No, that's for sure.
We used to bounce back.
And then once it starts hurting, then we just swear off exercise and said it wasn't good for me, and we go back to sitting on the couch.
That's the elephant bailing again.
Well,
actually, if I was smart, I wouldn't argue against it.
Tell us a little bit more about your new book, Healthy Family Evolution, Moms Strong. Is this written strictly for moms, or can dads read it too?
No, dads can read it. I've had a bunch of people. What it is it's written, like I said, as a story, but it's step by step. So there's exercises in there, and it's written in steps.
Yeah, I like that.
I didn't write it as days. It's like step one, two, three. So you go through the steps, and what I do when I'm working with people on our program here is we just tell them, look, just go through like two steps a week. So it's only like 10 pages a week they read.
Yeah, okay. You don't have to read the whole thing cover to cover just all at once.
No, not at all. It's actually better to just go chapter by chapter or step by step.
I see.
Because there's exercises in it. And at first, the first half of the book is talking to the elephant. Because we don't need to talk to the logical writer anymore.
Yeah.
It knows why we're supposed to be healthy.
Yeah, we all
but what
know
we need
we're
to do,
to
how we talk to the elephant is by talking about dreams and what's it going to feel like when we feel better? What's it going to feel like when we're healthy?
Yeah,
what
that's
kind of
such
things are we going to be able to do that we can't do when we're healthy?
Then you really
that's
make
you
it worthwhile. Instead of just some esoteric, well, I want to drop 10 pounds, you start thinking about those clothes you're going to wear and all the activities you're going to enjoy, how you're going to breathe easier, how your mind will work better, and all the other things that go with weight loss.
Yeah, and pin it down to specifics. You know, I've got a couple I'm working with out here that have been married. They're actually younger, but they're both, you know, over 300 pounds. And in trying to find out what they want,
yeah.
When you really get under the levels, it's like, you know, we go to the beach together. We like to go to the beach, but we don't do anything because we get tired. So we really want to take these hikes.
Yeah.
We really want to do this hike. So how can we get there?
Huh.
That's perfect. That's talking to the elephant, right? But they're going to be able to
right.
do something together.
Yeah.
So then once you know that, and that's what you do at the first part of the book, is talking about those dreams and things you want to do and experience. Because then you have something to work toward. Then I can take that and go, okay, how far is that walk? Well, it's a 3-mile walk. Okay, so let's take where you're at now that, you know, if you can only walk a couple hundred yards or a quarter mile, let's come up with a plan to build you up so that you can go do it and enjoy it when you do it, not be dying. So it's like, this is the worst thing ever. And I think that's what most people do. You know, they approach activities like they do exercise. So I think, hey, let's go. I think it'd be a great idea to go hike Mount Whitney. Well, great. It's a
that's
about a 14-hour miserable trek unless you're in really good shape. So you can go accomplish things, but you have to have a plan to get there so that not only can you do it, but you can enjoy it while you're doing it.
Yeah, you envision what the reward is, and then you work that plan, and you really have something you're shooting for. That makes so much sense, and that makes so much more sense than just popping a diet pill or following the Weight Watchers program or whatever. Not to knock
One of the exercises I love to have people do is, because the number one excuse I hear all the time of why people can't exercise is because no time.
Yeah, no time.
So one of the things I have people do is do a time audit, time waster audit.
Yeah.
So they write down for a day how much time do they spend on their phone, how much time do they spend watching TV, how much time do they spend on Facebook and, you know, on the computer or playing video games or whatever, and you'll find plenty of time. There's plenty of time.
Yeah, we always emphasize that when we're in my book talking about midlife renewal. There's plenty of time to renew your life if you eliminate all those time wasters that you're talking
about.
And you need to schedule that in just as much as you schedule an appointment for anything else you're doing, because it's what's more important than, all the health goes together with the renewal of your whole spirit and mind and everything else.
Yeah, absolutely. That's it's the foundation, right? If you're not healthy, you can't really excel in all your other areas. So that's why
you're not really going to renew your life in a 50-pound soft overweight body. Or not very likely anyway. Few people are able to do that. But, best can somebody preview your book and purchase it? Where should they go to do that?
Well, they can go on Amazon.com. It's on Amazon. Just look up Healthy Family Evolution, Mom Strong. You'll find it on there. It's on the Kindle too.
Yeah.
And then also they could go to, like what you were just talking about, I also have a blog. It's timterrio.com.
I see.
And that I post on there a lot of stuff. But what you just said reminded me, the problem is people don't know what it's going to feel like to be 30 pounds lighter.
No.
So what I did is I went and made a fat suit. So I made a suit with coveralls that has weights in it distributed like it would be if you gained weight.
Yeah.
So if they go on my blog on timterrio.com, you'll see videos of people that I have put the fat suit on and then try to do stuff.
Yeah.
And then they take the suit off and they do the same thing again, and how much faster they can move. So it's an actual way to see what 30 pounds. And they don't believe it, that it's 30 pounds. So I'll let them get on the scale and then take it off and see that it's only 30 pounds. Because it's
one of our local TV anchor women put on a fat suit, and her purpose was to show how heavy, overweight people are discriminated against. But it reminds me of what you're saying there.
I like it more just to show people, look how miserable it is trying to get them down off the ground, how much harder it is.
I know you also have another website called www.terriotherapy.com that had a bunch of information on it, and including a little bit about your book and some other stuff on there. In fact, you have a whole
bunch of websites. That's our therapy one. That's the main company one.
Yeah.
And the shorter version now is myterrio.com.
Oh, myterrio.com. I guess that would probably be where...
M-Y-T-E-R-R-O.com. T-E-R-R-I-O.com.
Yeah, that would be, I guess, where somebody would want to go to find out the basics.
Yeah, and it's got more about me and the company and all the different stuff we do. But the book's on there. There's some stuff about the book on there. There's actually on my blog, I put a few of the chapters from the book.
Yeah, I noticed.
I put some of the writing up there.
Yeah, when I was previewing it on Amazon, I noticed some of the same stuff that's on your blog there. Very worthwhile stuff. As Tim points out, obesity and chronic disease are becoming epidemic in our society, and now our children are following the trend. And instead of continually striving like Einstein said, there's nothing dumber than to get more insane than to keep doing something that doesn't work. So instead of that roller coaster we've been on, why not get the whole family involved in a coordinated effort to become more active and change your habits and behaviors together? And working as a team is so much easier than trying to do it alone. And also, when you look at it this way, that you're not just dropping a few pounds for yourself, but you're helping your children, your most beloved family members, and your husband or wife, and to improve their life and extend their life and have a much better adult life by adopting that new lifestyle. And I would highly suggest Tim's website and his book, Healthy Family Evolution, Mom Strong. And thanks so much, Tim, for joining us today. I think this has been a very useful conversation.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on and helping me spread the word about getting people healthy.
And let's all get fit.
Absolutely.
Bye-bye. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, let's be honest with ourselves. This is your moment of truth. How many times this past summer did you pig out at barbecues, load up on bad calories at the state or county fair, or spoil yourself by dining out three times a day while you were on vacation? You probably were more active outdoors, but did you exercise enough to overcome all those extra calories you took in? Now that it's September, do you have the nerve to face your bathroom scale? And if you do, what is it telling you? Is it harder now than it was early last spring to squeeze into your fall and winter wardrobe? And I hate to admit it, but I often have to lie down flat on the bed to button my trousers, but at least I can still get them on. And my bathroom scale confirms that I've gained about 5 or 10 pounds from early in the year. And if you're in a similar situation and not happy about it, what can we all do to get back on track? And fortunately, our next guest, Linda Spangler, is the perfect person to turn to for advice. And you may recall Linda from our May 5th program when she gently told us how to make friends with our scale. And she's here today to help us get back on track after a recent weight loss or weight management setback. And to refresh your memory, Linda Spangler is a registered nurse with a master's degree in health education, and she's a weight management coach and a leading authority on emotional eating and other psychological issues related to weight gains. And over the past 20 years, she's counseled more than 2,500 clients and taught several thousand more in seminars and workshops. And she's author of 3 books, including the award-winning top seller Life is Hard, Food is Easy, and her latest that we talked about last time, Friends with the Scale. Hello, Linda, and welcome back. You're just in time for the fall.
Yes, thank you so much. And you did a good job of describing how summer kind of gets us in trouble sometimes.
Yeah. Well, to begin with, are there are weight gain setbacks common even among successful dieters? Or are we alone if we've gained a few pounds?
No, absolutely. I have found there are very few people who really hold their weight at an exact perfect place for long term. I think it's more common what you were kind of indicating. You know, we have times of year that will have extra challenges, you know, like barbecues and vacations and that kind of thing. There are other things, though, that I think also can cause a setback. Sometimes if you go through a big loss, you know, maybe the death of a parent or the end of a relationship, boy, those can really put you into a tailspin just with coping with life.
Yeah.
And a lot of times food becomes the kind of the comfort and the nurturing that you're desperately wanting.
I know that even the emotional upset of vacation's over and you have to go back to the routine can make you overeat, I guess.
It certainly does. Yeah, there are many things, big or small. But you know what? It doesn't really matter if it's a major loss or if you just have a sprained ankle.
Yeah.
You can still have a setback, and sometimes it's so hard to get going again on your weight management efforts.
When you have a sprained ankle or something like that, or broke your leg or something, fell off the bike, you can't exercise, but most of us don't change our eating habits to recognize that we're not burning as many calories.
Well, and sometimes we try to, you know, eat the food just to make us feel better. This spring, I had a strange thing. I was walking my dog, a little cocker spaniel named Peppy, and for some reason there was some loose dirt on the sidewalk, and I slid on the loose dirt, flew up in the air, and slammed down on the sidewalk, and I ended up bruising a rib. Well, that's, first of all, pretty painful, and secondly, though, of course, I couldn't exercise for a while because I had to wait till that was better. And then, of course, I felt kind of sorry for myself, too. And I will admit, Roy, that I slid into some little struggles with my eating, and I had a setback during that time.
And you're the coach.
Yes, exactly. But it just says that, you know what, we all have struggles. In fact, most of my writing work in all of my books comes out of my own kind of learning and struggles and experiences. And I think that's what makes it so that I connect with people the way I do.
Yeah, don't feel too bad. I was walking our cocker years ago named Lucky, who since has passed away, but I stepped in an open sewer one time and gashed my legs.
Oh, that's even worse.
Yeah.
That
would
cause a setback.
Yeah. Okay, so the damage is done and you've gained back 10 pounds and they're not good pounds. You didn't want them. What are some crucial first steps to regain momentum and get back to a healthy diet and exercise routine? Should you try to do that all at once or how
No, I think sometimes you have to take it a little bit in stages. And one of the first things that I usually suggest is give yourself a little grace period. In other words, just let yourself be human. You know, if you need to cry, go ahead and cry. Or be angry or discouraged or depressed and just let yourself have the normal reaction. Like when I, you know, bruised my rib, boy, I tell you what, I was pretty frustrated. But I knew that I had to just let myself have a little grace period there and allow it. And then what happens, you reach a point where you're ready to move on and you kind of know it. So then at that point you say, okay, grace period is over. Now it's time to get back on track. And then
that's the key, that you don't let the grace period go on too long.
Exactly. But I think sometimes recognizing that you are allowing a grace period actually does help, because otherwise you just think, oh, see, I'm just a failure. I can't do anything right.
Yeah, that's the worst thing you can do is say,
so
I'm
if you're
a failure,
labeling
it's not
it
even
a little
worth dieting anymore because I just can't do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, in your books, you mentioned that emotional eating often works against us when we're attempting to lose weight and keep it off. What is emotional eating, and why does it so often sabotage our weight loss intentions?
It's just... Well, the way I define it, it's not like it's some big diagnosis. It's simply any time that you reach for food when you're not physically hungry or needing nutrition.
I see.
It's not that it's always bad, because sometimes you go, wow, I'm going to have a piece of birthday cake, and that's okay.
And but, my mouth starts watering.
Yeah, but the problem is it's so easy to slide into eating for all kinds of other reasons, you know, for comfort or to decrease my stress or just because I'm bored and I want something to do. Those things are all in the category of emotional eating.
Yeah.
And the problem is they will usually sabotage your diet plan because you end up just taking in a lot of extra calories.
Yeah, that's such a eating between meals and snacking and that kind of stuff. Well, what are five behaviors that work against us when we're trying to lose weight or keep it off? And I guess they're emotional eating, but can maybe some effective strategies to overcome them. I know I certainly related some of these.
I think the first one that is so common is, I just call it eating unconsciously.
Yeah.
You know, and that's when you're just not paying attention. You know, you look down at your plate and you say, who ate my food? You know, because it disappeared and you didn't really even notice you were eating.
Yeah,
and
I know that you call that head hunger. It's not really your stomach, it's just your head.
Exactly. The head hunger phrase refers to the kind of eating where you're looking for something chewy or crunchy. You know, nuts and chips and those kind of foods. Do you know that usually when you're looking for that type of a food, you're dealing with some kind of what I call pressure emotions, things like anger or frustration or stress.
Yeah.
And if you can say, wait a minute, what do I want to chew on in life right now? You'll get some kind of an answer pretty quickly. You know, it might be your boss or your kids. But then you can say, well, if I eat right now, is that going to change it?
Yeah, sometimes I'd like to bite my boss in the ass. But
yeah, a lady recently told me that every time her kids came in the door after school, they would just drop their backpacks right at the front door.
Oh.
And she kept, you know, over and over would tell them,
yeah,
here's where they're supposed to go, put
yeah
them away. And she said, I would get so angry at them, I'd head to the refrigerator and grab something to eat. Finally, she said to herself, wait a minute, is my eating changing the problem with the backpacks? No. So she decided she had to come up with a different plan, and so she worked out some new things with the kids and changed the pattern that way.
Yeah, that's so good to you point out the solution is to find alternative approaches to dealing
yeah
with your frustration rather than just grabbing food.
Absolutely.
You also talk about eating for comfort or heart hunger, and that's what is that exactly?
Oh, and that's a very common one. I think almost more common. In fact, that's the times that you're eating because of something empty.
Oh, I see.
You know, sadness, loneliness,
yeah,
boredom, restless. Where you just feel like your heart kind of wants something,
yeah,
you know?
Nothing
sometimes
better to
it's
do.
Just,
than or your,
yeah. Sometimes
yeah,
it's memory food, you know, like your mom's apple pie or something. And the problem is those foods that we go after when we're seeking that kind of comfort or help for emptiness,
yeah,
they're usually really smooth or creamy texture foods or memory foods, so things
yeah
like ice cream and pasta and desserts of almost any kind.
They always have lots of calories in them, too.
Yes. But again, if you can say, wait a minute, what is it that I need right now? Well, I need to be challenged a little more in life, or
yeah,
I need to feel a little more, you know, connected with people so I'm not so
yeah
lonely.
Yeah.
Well, then, again, eating is not going to fix that.
Yeah, you need to take positive steps to
you do
fill a need rather than just stuffing
that's
your
right
face.
You know, I often think of emotional eating this way. It's sort of like if you had a baby that was crying because it needed its diaper changed.
Yeah.
Well, you could feed the baby and it would probably stop crying.
Yeah.
But you didn't fix the problem.
No, that's true. I love the one you talk about eating out of obligation. I know when I go to a restaurant, every day it seems that I go to a restaurant nowadays, it seems like the food is way more than what I really want to eat. But you say, well, I paid $14.95 or $19.95 or whatever for this dinner. I better eat it.
I know. You know, I think there's a fascinating thing that goes with that, and that's that we decide to go to a restaurant, and we say, okay, I'm going to probably spend about $10 or so,
yeah,
and that's going to be my meal, and I'm going to have a nice meal.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you ate half of the food on your plate and then decided you were full,
yeah,
you have to say, well, did I get what I wanted, which was a nice meal? Okay,
yeah,
then in that case, I got my money's worth.
That's true.
So instead of thinking that your money's worth means everything that's served to you, you redefine it and you say, you know, when
yeah
I've eaten the amount I want, I got my money's worth.
Well, I take it even better. I always take a to-go carry-out when I finish eating.
Yeah, and you
what
know,
I want.
That's a
I get
that's
two
a good
meals
way to manage
for the price
it
of one.
Although I will tell you an interesting thing. There was some research done a few years ago where they monitored it at a couple of different, just like chain restaurants.
Yeah.
The people who left with to-go bags were a great, great percent of the people were overweight compared to those who looked normal weight.
Well, that's strange.
And, you know, it's kind of tricky.
Yeah.
We don't know exactly if it's just that those people go right home and eat the rest of it or
yeah
what it is. As long as you manage your takeout part okay
yeah
and eat it the next day, it's fine.
Yeah, no,
but
I
think sometimes we eat high-calorie food twice instead of once because
yeah, no,
we take off at home.
You have to be careful not just take it home and eat the rest of it.
That's right.
Well, is it possible to alter the mindset in order to address the underlying psychological causes of overeating? In effect, can you become your own weight management coach and once and for all get off that roller coaster that so many of us are on?
Yeah, absolutely. I really believe it's a learning process like anything. If you're, you know, trying to learn a new skill or like a computer program or something, you may not ever get it to where you have it 100%. But as time goes on, you get to where you'll say to yourself, oh, wait a minute, I remember how to do this.
Yeah.
And in my work with my one-on-one coaching clients, I push all the time and say to them, my number one goal for you is that you will be able to coach yourself in the years
yeah
ahead so that when we're not working together anymore and you have a challenge come up, you're going to say, okay, this is what I've learned and this is what
yeah
I know I can apply. And that makes a big difference then, instead of just gaining the weight right back.
Yes, awareness is so much of a factor of keeping weight in control. If you're aware of your emotions of why you're wanting to overeat, then you can more likely overcome them rather than just unconsciously doing
it. And you know, being aware of your emotions isn't really that difficult. It's just that a lot of times we just don't want to think about them, you know.
No.
But there's a very simple tool that I teach. You take a piece of paper and draw a line down the middle.
I see.
The left side you write, I feel. The right side you write, because of. And you just start putting down words. Like you might say, I feel sad because my boyfriend left.
Yeah.
I feel uneasy because work is so stressful. So by the time that you've done half a dozen words, you're going to understand why you're struggling right now.
Yeah.
And then you can say, okay, what can I do to take care of myself instead of just eating to try to obliterate these feelings?
Yeah. Well, I understand you offer a number of free resources on effective weight loss on your website. Where can a listener go to obtain those resources? I know you have a website or two.
Certainly, yes. My website is weightlossjoy.com. And it's part of the idea that, you know, weight loss joy is how you feel when it works. And you'll find resources including the new book, Friends with the Scale, as well as a blog where there are a lot of good content and ideas for you that can make a difference in the long-term changes.
Well, on our last visit, we talked at length about your latest book, Friends with a Scale, but I really like this 2011 book, Life is Hard, Food is Easy, The Five-Step Plan to Overcome Emotional Eating and Lose Weight on Any Diet. And I love the way you point out that the specific diet doesn't matter near as much as changing that mindset so that the diet will take and you won't just go back to gaining weight as soon as you end losing it.
That's absolutely right. You know, again, in my coaching work, people are always hunting for the right plan. Where is the latest diet?
Yeah.
Where is the new
Where's
diet?
The latest magic silver bullet?
And yet, in my work, I come back over and over with them to say, okay, what is it that was missing that didn't make the last one work? And how do we take care of that gap? Because that's really the bottom line, the emotional eating patterns and life coping, so that you don't reach for food as a solution every time you're unhappy.
Yeah, that's true. It's not a solution really to anything except the nutritional need.
Yeah.
Up to that, of course. But well, the bottom line, if you gained a few pounds this summer, it's not the end of the world. I'm sure Linda would agree with that. The important thing is to understand why the weight gain occurred and how to get back on track, and ultimately why you and you alone can control when and how much you eat. After all, since you were about 1.5 years old, no one has been putting food in your mouth. And there are plenty of diet books out there, but what I love about Linda Spangler's books is they're not about what specific foods to eat, but about changing your whole mental attitude about eating. And without understanding why we overeat and avoid the scale, we will never really conquer the weight loss challenge. So let's all go out and take rational control of our eating habits. And it just makes sense to think before you eat.
Yes,
eat for nourishment.
Absolutely.
Eat for nourishment and gain pleasure from sensible eating. I mean, it's great sitting around with the family or going out to dinner, but let's all stop letting our emotions dictate what we eat and when we eat. And thanks a million, Linda Spangler. You've been most helpful.
Great. Thank you for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Yeah, maybe we can have you back around the holidays and tell us how
That'd be great. That's a good time for a little input.
Yeah, and tune in next week when we'll talk some more about sound health habits for middle age. And thank you for joining us today on Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.